Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 208. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And we actually have a lot of new stuff this week. It's weird, though. It's back to our usual. I saw a couple things, and Chris saw a couple things. But luckily, that kind of covers a lot of, the new theater as well as video at home video releases tonight.
Yeah.
But we're going to start off with a theatrical release I had every intention of seeing despite reviews. But I did not mess. Literally, I bought a ticket, quote unquote, bought with my AMC Stubbs thing or whatever, and then proceeded to sleep right through my showtime. So, Crystal, you made it out to see Dark Phoenix.
I did. I guess the final X-Men movie. Whatever. It's Disney has it now, so it'll join the MCU at some point. The final standalone X-Men movie that was done by Fox. It brings back Michael Fassbender, James McAvoy, Jennifer Lawrence, like that first class cast. Was Jean Grey was Sophie Turner previously in?
Yeah, she's in Apocalypse.
Okay. So she takes center stage here in Dark Phoenix, and it's in some ways it's a retelling of X-Men 3.
Yeah.
If you remember that one, Last Stand.
Yeah.
It's the Dark Phoenix saga adapted for the big screen. Shit goes bad in space. Jean gets this radiation thing. It makes her more powerful than she already was. She was pretty powerful mutant as it was, and she's actually like exceeded everybody else at this point. There's some interesting stuff that plays with her past and how Xavier kind of like maybe manipulated her mind. Not maybe, like very clearly did. They show that in the trailer, so I'm not spoiling anything really. She was like younger, like way, like he had already kind of established his school.
Oh, I'm mixing her up with Raven. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. Raven is a Mystique, Jennifer Lawrence's character. Yeah. Jean comes into it later on where she comes in as a student, her and Cyclops and like the younger crew after the first class. And, he's always, I think the big thing with the X-Men is always like Charles and Magneto, Eric, they're always two sides of the same coin. Like they're always trying to do the same thing, but with different kind of approaches. And, he wants to help mutants, but he also wants to integrate them into society. So he kind of mind wipes Jean after this horrible accident caused by her, her powers happens. But this new power she's gotten from this space mission, has like thrown her brain out of whack, and she's starting to re-see things from her past and piece things together. She kind of goes off. I think all that's really interesting, but there's also these weird aliens that they've thrown in. Jessica Chastain plays one of them. I don't know what the fuck they're there for other than like, oh, we need a baddie.
Yeah. Like a traditional, like outside of, whatever. Cause Jean Grey kind of becomes.
Yeah. She comes from like the good side. She's not necessarily turning bad. She's just, her powers are out of control. She doesn't really have, her full bearings of everything, and she's lashing out because she's young and she doesn't understand what's happening. And then there's these aliens that want to harness the power that Jean has inside her. And I don't know what their purpose. I don't know if they're like they want to destroy humanity or I have no idea. Like they don't really lay out their motivations very well, and there's such a minimal part of it, but without them there really isn't an antagonist. Like because it's like, oh, we have to stop Jean, and then once they stop Jean, then it's like, all right, well, who do we fight? So like, you need the big finale.
Yeah. All right.
And that's kind of the issue here. Like, I like a lot of what happens. I like these characters. I like the actors that play them, but this weird, you know, not needed antagonist, or not well-developed antagonist. Like, I think you need an antagonist for this, but they didn't create a villain. They just kind of threw Jessica Chastain and her alien homies like into it. And it doesn't necessarily work, but I do think like the finale, like regardless of whether like you care about the motivations, like the finale against these aliens when, you know, Eric and Magneto and like his crew team up with the X-Men to fight off and protect Jean, or try and rescue her. Ultimately, it's a fun scene. Like, I enjoyed it more than like that, the finale of Endgame. I think it plays better. It's not so much for like, oh, we need to get these people in here to have their spectacle moment, which I felt a lot of Endgame's finale was. Like, oh, we need to have Spider-Man, so we're gonna throw him in, we're gonna like have him swing across. Like, everybody here has a purpose and they're all working interchangeably, and it looks cool. It's like on a train, shit's blowing up. It's a nice confined space as opposed to this, like in Endgame it was that big vast kind of wasteland battlefield. This is more confined. Like, it's more understandable, like what the kind of environment is, and how that plays with the combat and the action that's going on. I think it's way more satisfying. It's just getting to that point takes a little bit. Like, there's a lots of good pieces here. I like the character moments. I like the action in it, but it doesn't necessarily all tie itself together.
Yeah, you know, it's like listening to talk about it. Like, I rewatched all, like, from First Class on, inspiration for this movie I didn't go see. And like, I agree with, like, one point I strongly agree with you on is you said you like this cast, you like these characters. And for me, it's like, even going through a movie I didn't enjoy that much, which was Apocalypse, like, that's what kept me in it. Like, I was still able to watch it because I like this group so much. Like, so it's like what makes me want to see Dark Phoenix despite what, you know. It's like, I know even if it's bad, it's like, oh, I still have McAvoy as fucking, you know, as Charles, and I still have Fassbender, and I still have, you know, like all these people I've grown to really like over the course of three movies.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know. So. Well, where are you falling on?
I'm like right in the middle. I think it's a 3 of 5. Like, I enjoyed watching it, but man, there's not a lot of, like, you know, the glue that holds this shit together is, it's like it was done with like a glue stick. Mm. It's like it can be ripped apart real easily. I think you have to go in, you know, having enjoyed these characters. And just, you know, go for the ride. I think it's a fun ride. It's, you know, the acting in this, these, the people that got to play these characters are excellent actors, and they put on performances that aren't necessarily comic booky, even though that's what this is.
Yeah. Like, this is just a different flavor. Like, I don't know. I prefer these movies. Even though Bad One's so much more than MCU, because, like, I don't know, dude, like,
well, most of them deal with issues, right? Like,
yeah, I was gonna say, like, you know, it sounds like this one struggles to have a reason to be.
Yeah.
But like Days of Future Past, it has such a strong, and that I think it's probably the best of these recent ones, in my opinion. It has such a strong, like, setup. It's like, we have to go back in time to stop this assassination from happening. Because if this assassination happens, it starts the war between humans and mutants, and the Sentinels, like, kind of take over everything and kill, you know, kill all the mutants as well as some humans. And it's just like, that's such a strong setup where it's like, Dinklage in that. He's like the villain. He doesn't really have to overplay the villain role at all, because it's just like he's just the guy that came up with this thing, and it ended up being like a very terrible thing. And he is kind of like a horrible, evil person, but it's like you could kind of see the reasoning of where he's coming from in a way. It just like it has a strong like point to it. Whereas I've not seen Dark Phoenix, but like Apocalypse is just like, oh, we woke this bad guy. It's just like, you know, there's not like a really good reason for what he's doing or anything. Like,
I think that's always been like outside of Days of Future Past, which I agree with you is like the, I think it's the best of the X-Men movies, like hands down, like much like you're including like Logan.
Which
but
is
even
a
then,
flavor
like,
also,
yeah,
kinda,
I think like it's up there with that, but the villains have been a problem, I think, in the X-Men movies because Charles and Magneto are so closely tied and they're basically the same. They just approach things differently. They're trying to get the same goal. So it's like, you can't really be like, oh, like he's this big bad guy. Like,
well, it's funny because in none of these newer movies, Magneto is not the main villain in any of them.
Right.
In fact, they always end up working together, like, which is cool. Like, I like that. Like,
yeah.
But it's just funny. Like, they never, like, Magneto has never been baddie. Where I think in the earlier ones, like in 3, he might have been. I don't know.
And he definitely was in the original X-Men movie. And yeah, in 3, like he is manipulating things behind the scenes, along like trying to, you know, take over. Like Jean is the antagonist there, but like he's obviously the one, you know, pulling the strings. And then like is he kind of turns villain, I guess, in First Class a little bit, but they never make him like the full villain, which I think is a smart call here because he's not necessarily wrong in what he's ever trying to do. It's just his approaches. And
you can sympathize with him.
Yeah.
You
know, and
based on his life, his past.
This is going to be a shitty comparison because they're two white dudes, but the X-Men have always kind of been a allegory for race and handling of social issues. But like Xavier is more like Martin Luther King, where Magneto is more maybe.
Like, I saw someone making that comparison. I forgot who. So you're not the first person to think of that.
Yeah, I just think it's like it's a shitty thing because like it's like, oh, we're comparing these two white dudes that are comic book characters to like these two actual.
It's an analogy that makes sense though.
Yeah,
like, that makes different approaches. One is more, on the offensive, and one is more like, let's try to convince people to do the right thing, or
right.
You know.
So it's like I don't view either of them as like the villains, but it does leave a hole sometimes in these films, like where there's a villain, and like Apocalypse suffered from it, obviously, like with their very generic, the comic booky villain. Dark Phoenix suffers from it because they just throw in Jessica Chastain's alien character. But ultimately, I think the performances, the characters, are what drives these films. And if you enjoy, you know, if you enjoy this cast, you enjoy these characters. It's fun enough that it'll drive you through the minute and 50, the hour and minutes that it is. So
at least it's that's another thing. It's like a more manageable length.
It's not 3 hours long.
Really long. I think Apocalypse was really long, also like over 2 hours for sure. But anyways, I still look forward to seeing it despite like, I don't think I've heard a single person be like over the moon about it, but like everything, like it's in the details of what people are saying, where it's like, what, you know, like we said, it's like if you're into this series, you'll probably be okay for the ride. And so I don't know. I think my window of seeing it in the theater is closed because there's another two movies this weekend I want to see. And I've had a really bad track record of actually
getting there.
So yeah, we'll see. But I look forward to seeing it, and I'll give my thoughts, hopefully, if I remember when I do see it. But
yeah,
it's too bad it didn't turn out better for like the finale.
Yeah, and I guess there's technically another X-Men movie coming, but it doesn't feature anybody here. It's a
oh yeah,
New Mutants that was filmed. It was supposed to come out like 2 years ago and is now pushed to next year.
That'll be an interesting one.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll move on to the next film, which is, I will talk about a film called Her Smell, which is directed by Alex Ross Perry and written by him. He hasn't done a whole lot that, like, actually, I don't really know any of his movies, I'm ashamed to say, but he did write, or he was a co-writer on Christopher Robin.
Okay.
This is nothing like Christopher Robin. Her Smell, it stars Elizabeth Moss from Handmaid's Tale and Mad Men as kind of like this Courtney Love type rocker who is like past, like it's past the peak of their popularity, this band, and you are entering in on this really nasty downward spiral.
Okay.
And, you know, it's very much in that genre of, you know, like a kind of a music rocker movie where, you know, they're out of control. But also just think of like any serious drama you've kind of seen about drugs and, you know, about a person who is like struggling with a drug addiction, right?
Right.
It's weird because like her drug addiction is ill-defined in this. Like, you, I don't know. I think you're supposed to walk away from it thinking that it's a bit of everything, like coke, you know, fucking drinking,
right?
Anything, basically any drug you put in front of her, you know, psychedelic, whatever. In fact, she seems to be on psychedelics through parts of it, and she has a shaman there who she's hired to take her on spiritual journeys.
Okay.
So, you know, I gave you the setup for this. You kind of have an idea of what this is. Like, and, you know, it's very much in the same genre as A Star Is Born. But I think it's a kind of a different take on how to do that type of movie. Like, this is definitely more low budget, definitely more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's any less good, actually. I think it's actually really good. It's just a kind of slightly different beast, but it is, you know, at the end of the day, it's about a rock star who has a drug problem, which is, you know, same thing with, well, I guess his was just specifically drinking, right? In A Star Is Born.
I mean, I think he does pills and stuff too.
Okay, yeah, okay. So same kind of idea, and you know, and you do have the musical numbers in this, like full-on musical numbers, and I actually found the music in this movie to be really, really awesome. And I think, like, if that's really Elizabeth Moss singing, she's awesome. And, you know, kind of, it does kind of have, like, a whole sound to it. Like, I'd say better, honestly, in some of the songs. And, like, if you're a friend of, or if you're a friend, if you're a fan of alternative rock or whatever, I think you'll dig the soundtrack here.
Okay.
So a weird thing or two about the movie, like I said, it's a little bit different than Star Wars. Like, in my opinion, it's like nowhere near as commercial. Because for one, it is 2 hours and 15 minutes, which I forgot how long Star Wars Born is, but
it might have been around a little bit longer.
Okay. But like this, it doesn't feel like it. It feels like six really long scenes. And it's like the scenes kind of play out as if they're happening in real time. So it feels like someone is following this band around and documenting them, and you're getting to see shit devolve. So, like, for instance, the very first scene of the film is, like, they're finishing up a show, so you get to see them do, like, their last song of a show. Then they come back, like, you know, backstage afterwards, and, like, that first scene is probably at least a half hour long, and it almost feels like one take, right?
Okay.
Them hanging out backstage and like people trying to talk to her while she's like fucking trying to do her shit with the shaman, and she's just whacked out and all over the fucking place. And there's like people trying to get her, you know, signed fucking lawsuits that they're bringing against her, divorce papers or whatever, you know, like it's like people trying to like, hey, we need a minute to like actually talk to you. She's like, it's time to fucking party! Like, you know.
Right.
What is your fucking problem? You know, like just
Bring me that shit tomorrow.
yeah. And that's kind of what it is. Like, and you know, I'm not gonna give away the whole movie, but there's, it's just different scenes like that. Like, you know, a scene where they're trying to lay down their next record, and that's like a good half hour, you know. But in doing so through these like six scenes, it tells a story both of kind of her downfall and what comes next. Another interesting thing I thought about it, like, it feels like it reaches this logical conclusion where you're like, oh, that's the ending. But then, like, no, there's like another 40 minutes. And it wasn't a case where I was like, dude, why does this thing just keep going on? And like, I was like, oh, that was kind of cool if they went a little further than, you know, like, where does this like story goes next? Can she stay sober? Can she, like, it's not just like, oh, she got into, like, the logical conclusion is like rehab happens. You're like, oh, okay, so that's the end. Like, you see her sober, maybe she's gonna make it. But no, there's another like half hour where we get to see if she's gonna make it. I think it's one of the better films that I've seen this year. It's again, I don't think it'll be everyone's quite cup of tea, but I think if you're into this genre, I think if you liked A Star Is Born, again, this is a different beast slightly, but check it out, I say.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in it. Everything you said hits notes for me. I'm just wondering if,
Yeah.
like, I will be down with the music,
I
which I
mean,
am. Like, I do like that area of music, but it's like,
not like a Hole fan, because I know a lot of people like
yeah.
alternative, but don't like Hole. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, they're okay, but I also like, it's I don't know. I have like a weird perception of like Courtney Love, and
Yeah.
it's probably a wrong perception of her, but it's just how she was perceived, for so long. Like, she was kind of like the almost like the Yoko Ono of Nirvana, and
Yeah, well, like none of that's really here, and like a lot of
yeah.
people use the comparison. It's just a standard. It's like she was the biggest grunge rocker.
Okay, yeah.
At least say, fucking what's her name, Shirley Manson, or you know.
Right.
Although, like when you think of grunge rocker who like has a certain look, who also you think has a drug problem, like that's where the comparison
Right.
kind of. Yeah, like, but there's no like Kurt Cobain angle or any of that. I mean, she's destructive and everything. And I do think like, I think that like some of these songs are like as good as anything Hole did or better. There's some that like are just come off like grunge ballads. They're like super, like you're just like wow, like there's a song like right when you like I got it on DVD and like right when you're like on the main menu, I'm like right away I'm like, oh, this is fucking awesome.
Nice. Yeah, that's something like a movie like that's something that made A Star Is Born so good was
Yeah.
the music and the writing and the performance was so good. Like,
Oh,
if you
dude.
have a movie about music that just like where the music doesn't work, especially if it's original music, like that can
Yeah.
matter. It doesn't necessarily drive, but this sounds like it might hit.
Yeah, like I think again, I like the soundtrack enough where I'm like thinking about getting it. I don't think it's like that many songs in the soundtrack, probably like five or six. But I do feel like if you look at the Star A Star Is Born soundtrack, like they definitely padded that shit out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like I'm fine. Like I'll pay $7 or whatever to get like the five or six songs. I think they're all really good, and I think they're all original except for one, which is a cover of a Bryan Adams song.
Okay.
It's not the you know the big one. It's not the two that I always think of. It's like the third one I can never remember the name of. Let's see if I could pull it up here. Don't know. But yeah, it's like a really cool piano cover of a Bryan Adams song, and like will almost bring you to tears. It's like. And like the scene that it happens in is just really great. So it's like really good music, and some of it like really plays to this. I'd say there's several songs like that that really play to the scene that's happening.
Nice.
So I hope I've talked it up enough to convince you to check it out. It is, I'm gonna give it 4 stars, but like I was teetering on the edge here. It, like I said, it's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Nice.
So
It's on Netflix.
I got it through
Or no.
Netflix
Okay.
disc.
Okay.
But I'm sure you could just rent it on Amazon or whatever.
Okay.
Well, up next, we're going back out to the theater to see Rocket Man, which nobody fucking went to go see either. But we got another, like, well, this is one's like an actual biopic fucking type deal, but
Yeah, in a
another
way.
music movie.
It is like it is it tells the story of Elton John from when he was a kid up through when he kind of enters rehab. It is not your typical like biopic though, where it's just going like from A to B. A lot of like his storytelling here is fantastical. Probably how he remembers like his childhood and his early career, and also kind of how people maybe like how they felt experiencing him for the first time, where it's not necessarily realistic.
It's not a realistic representation of the concert, like it's more fantastical.
Yeah, like they're like so his first I think it's the Troubadour where he's playing at, and it's his first show in the US, and like when he comes out like there's this this great photo of him. He almost looks like he's flying, like he kind of jumps up, his legs are above his head, and he's like playing the piano, but like the way that probably actually played out is like he jumped up, somebody took a
Like
great
a
photo.
perfect picture.
Yeah, but they like play off of that where then he is flying like as he's like doing this, and it's that kind of correlation between what an artist feels when they first step on stage and are performing. It's that high they get, and like we're getting kind of like this fantastical approach to seeing that. There's also like moments where like early on, like he's like a young kid playing piano in a bar, and like he starts playing like some classical stuff, and the bar people are like, this kind of sucks, like play something good, and like his grandmother yells out, play that one I like, and he starts playing Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, and it just kind of breaks out into a straight up musical number, like with dancing and like him moving between scenes. So it's not like, oh, here's this historical look at Elton John. It does give you that as well, but it's way more fun and kind of creative in how it presents it. And also like, and if you don't know anything about Elton John, like his life was pretty fucked up until he got into rehab. And it's pretty like all over the place and insane, and it doesn't shy away from any of that. Like a lot of biopics often are like, they try to gloss over like the bad stuff, right? Like, earlier this year, I watched The Dirt, which is the Motley Crue one. And like that movie's fun. And it's like this fun, but it's like a sanitized retelling of their
I
story.
can only imagine.
Yeah. It's like, and I mean, in some ways, like you're trying to tell a life story of somebody over the course of like 2 hours or so. So you have to cut some corners here and there. But like when they do it and they kind of make it so that it's like, oh, it's not as bad as it seemed. Like, no, there are things that are bad in life, and Elton John
Like,
went.
he did real bad shit, right?
Yeah,
I'm assuming he did, things that were really regrettable
like. He did shit to himself that is like terrible, and like he experienced things that are terrible, and his family life was terrible. And they don't shy away from any of that. So it's like really engaging in the fact that it's like not afraid to like say, hey, like his mom like basically like tells him because he's gay, he's never gonna like find any happiness. And it doesn't shy away from doing that. It doesn't shy away from like the fact that his dad is a complete asshole, and like all Elton John ever wanted was for his dad to love him, and he never got that experience. He never got his dad to hug him, but he sees him with his like half brothers, and he's like very affectionate. It's like, so it's like, and it's like these slaps in the face that like just keep coming. But it's also fun because like Taron Egerton does a great job with it, and like the stage stuff is great and it's very colorful. Like Elton John is a very like boisterous performer, even now in his like late 60s or early 70s. I'm not sure exactly how old he is, but like I saw him last year, he's still very like engaging, even if he's not as, you know, loud and kind of obnoxiously colorful as he was early on. He still has that presence, and Taron Egerton definitely channels that and is able to give a great fun performance, that you end up caring for him and like the struggles that he's going through, even though he's like this super rich dude that like they even call out at one point, like he had 4% of all music sales in the entire world. Like that's like a huge number for one artist to have.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. And so like, you're like, oh, it's like, he's this rich dude, but like, you see how he's getting taken advantage of. And it's like sad, cause it's like, this shouldn't be happening. Like he's not a bad guy. He just wants to like do music.
Yeah.
And instead, like they're feeding him pills and coke and like booze and like whatever they can. And like, he starts turning and becoming self-destructive himself. I found it great. Like, I think that the music they chose was very well done. It's staged well. The musical numbers are great. But he also like has like, you know, like actual concert pieces as well, that play good. But it's most fun when it gets a little more off the wall, a little more fantastical than your normal.
Yeah. You could see some of that in the trailer. Like, I remember, like, it would just seem like, this doesn't look like a real, like, or if it was, it's like the type of show only he could put on, which is like crazy production values.
Yeah. Like, there's this, like, slight spoiler here. You see it in the trailer, like, where he goes out on stage at Dodger Stadium. He's wearing very bright, colorful, but that is all part of this like 4 or 5 minute segment, like where, you know, he's been rushed to the hospital and dies and like, but it's all done during like the music and like they're lifting him up, taking his clothes off, like, and like it's like a hospital, and but all while like he's singing, and it's just this crazy number, and it's like super creative in the way that it's done. So yeah, I loved it. Thought it was great. One of the best things I've seen this year.
Cool.
I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 5. But yeah, I think if you have any interest in Elton John's music or, you know, learning more about him, like it's a cool film to go through.
As you know, like I hate biopics, but I'm probably gonna watch this when it comes on video because. One, I've heard like other similar reactions to you. I've even heard from people that are like not into Elton John, but they're like, I fucking came out of that theater like singing the fucking music. but that's like I think the second thing for me is I do like Elton John, so I can watch a movie filled with his songs. That'd be cool, you know. So,
yeah.
I will get to it eventually. Chris, check out Her Smell.
Okay.
Another
I will.
But moving along. I saw Under the Silver Lake, which I did mention last time I was going to see, and I finally did rent it. This is the new film from David Robert Mitchell, who did It Follows, a film I love.
Yeah.
This is his follow-up, and it's a completely different beast. Andrew Garfield stars as this, like, guy who's kind of, like, you know, I'd say our age, like in his 30s, living in L.A., you know, you get the impression that he moved out there to be something, but now he's just like kind of living this aimless existence. He meets a girl in his apartment complex who he likes. The next morning he goes over to say hi to her. She's like disappeared. And so we follow him as he tries to figure out like, why did she move out in the middle of the night after he just met this girl? And you know, she didn't mention anything like this. This movie is like one of those, this is in our genre too, of like a couple of films. thinking specifically of like The Big Lebowski or Inherent Vice, where it's like this stumbling, bumbling kind of fucking stoner guy who, like, kind of like not very ambitious guy, just kind of gets sucked into this mystery and they're trying to solve it. And for me, I would put it above Inherent Vice, actually. I didn't like that movie at all. I put it well below The Big Lebowski. And I'm walking away with this. I'll just say my score up at the top. I'm going to give it like 3 out of 5. But I think it's a movie that won't work for a lot of people. And it's also very long. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes. And it feels kind of like as aimless as the main character. As he's like trying to solve this mystery, it goes down so many roads. It's like almost labyrinthian, or labyrinthine. Like we're just like, how did I get here? And where am I going next? It's almost like playing fucking like a really long video game, like GTA or something, where you're like, I've lost track of the plot at this point. Like, how did we end up wherever the fuck we are now? But it has again, I'm personally giving it a 3 because I think it like one, I think David Robert Mitchell shows once again here that he has great talent as a director. Because while not everything works here, I don't think this is like a home run like It Follows. Like the directing, like he's directing his fucking ass off on this. Like it just looks fucking fantastic. But there's also just like parts that are like really fun. Like there's a part where like he comes out to his car. Like it's just this is like a random thing that has nothing to do with the rest of the fucking movie. Like he comes out to his car and like it's been keyed. Like someone keyed it. They fucking drew a giant dick on the hood of his car. He's like, what the fuck? And he looks down the street and he sees kids running down the street, like throwing eggs at cars and doing shit. And he sneaks up on them and beats the fucking shit out of them. It's like fucking 14-year-old kids. And like, he like literally beats the shit out of them, dude. Like, and it's just like this random aside that has nothing to do with anything that I laughed my ass off of because I'm like, because one, I'm like, I could see myself almost reacting like that. Like, where I'm just like, you know what? Fuck you, little shits. You're getting what you deserve, you know? There's a weird part where the map of Hyrule plays a big, like, the original map of Hyrule from The Legend of Zelda plays a part in solving this mystery. There's just, like, enough little fucking things like that where I'm like, I came away, like, kind of enjoying it, but I think the thing is, like, a real mess. And I don't think it, like, all entirely works. And a lot of these movies, like the answer to the mystery isn't all that interesting or, nothing really like adds up as well should. I mean, and I would say like The Big Lebowski is way more satisfying. I feel like if this thing pulled off some like amazing finale, I think more people would come around to, like I think more people like a mainstream audience could react to this better. But as it is, it feels like this kind of like aimless thing that comes to a so what ending. So I think most people that see it, like I think a lot of people that see it will not like it. That said, like I didn't have interest in this that much. I thought it looked bad, like which is weird. Like I definitely wanted to see what this director did next, but I was like, just based off trailers and the fact that it barely got released, I was like, well, I guess this is not gonna fucking be good. But I ended up did like seeing it because like I'd seen a lot of people I follow on Twitter like being like, man, I like surprisingly really liked that movie, including our friend Javi, and his wife, Rachel. So I was just like, and they were not the first people I saw say that. So I was like, you know what? Check it out. Again, I liked it, but I don't think it entirely works. And I think for a lot of people, they're not gonna dig it. But if you're like a kind of a movie nerd, and you can just like enjoy watching how good this guy directs a film. Also, like you might get something out of it, but yeah, I think It Follows is the better of his two works so far.
Nice. All right, maybe I'll check it out.
I mean, this feels like something more personal, and like this, it feels like something he wanted to get done before he made It Follows, and like now he got to do his weird dream project about his stoner LA loser character.
Right.
I'm sure like people that live in LA will dig it. Like the one guy I fell onto who really liked this, he lives in LA, so I'm sure he's probably like reacting to that part of it. I don't know. I thought it was just not quite there, but worth checking out if you're into that genre or like wanting to see what this guy did next. I can't wait to see what he does do next after this. I wonder if he'll come back to the horror genre at any point.
Be interesting. I think the guy has promise, so.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I don't know if you've rewatched It Follows, but like, just look at that thing. It's great. And this, like, one thing you would walk away from this is just being like, man, just I fucking give this guy a script. Anyways, Chris, you also saw Night School. Is that what I think it is? Is that the Tiffany Haddish film?
Yeah, with Kevin Hart.
Well, that doesn't count.
I just kind of like put it on the side while I was working.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
My girlfriend like went and saw it with her daughter. And I was like, nah. She loved it though. She actually really liked it.
I mean that there are parts of it that are funny. It's a little too long, like maybe 20 minutes too long. I think it clocks in at like an hour and 50 minutes. And there's definitely some filler going on in it, but in terms of this, like, a nice, like, little light-hearted movie about education, and like people that dropped out of high school trying to like better their lives. They do a good job with making that part funny. And also, like they do bring to light some, educational disabilities. Kevin Hart's character like suffers from like a boatload of them, which is like he has trouble taking tests, which is something that like a lot of people struggle with. So it's kind of nice to see like them not mocking that and saying like, hey, there are ways to do this, provided your teacher cares about you and, will help you do it. It's outlandish, like completely ridiculous. Like I think if you've seen the trailer, like there's the they're in the MMA ring and she's just like punching him in the face, like telling him just remember shit. Which is kind of funny just to like see Kevin Hart get punched in the face. But I think she actually has pretty good comic timing. The rest of the people they the rest of the cast, very diverse, but all like they all work really well together. They all like they're having fun, which was enough to like carry me through the film. Like even though it's a little bit too long, like it was fun enough, and I don't regret watching it. But like I think it's on HBO right now. So like if you have HBO, like and you're not doing anything like crazy, like you're like. Oh, I could put something on the side, like, and it's kind of funny. Night school works for it.
I think I watched part of it, and I think it was on there, but like, yeah, I could see where you'd say that, but like, it also just like it'd be like it looks like a generic comedy. Like, there's nothing like,
Hey, there's nothing special about it. It is very much one of those, it's,
Didn't hold me, but like, I wasn't like, oh, this is terrible. I was just like, yeah,
fine.
whatever.
Like, I
I
mean,
don't like him that much, so it's like that hurts it for me.
right. If you don't like Kevin Hart, that's going to detract from it a whole lot. It's fine though. Like, I think like it's an okay comedy. And it's there are worse ways to kind of spend your time while you're doing something else.
All right, so I'm guessing you gotta give it like a three
Let me give
or
it three, yeah.
okay. All right, there's some TV out there though. I know you said you saw some stuff. What do you see?
Yeah, so not anything like, well, one is from this year. I finished watching the Vice docu-series Dark Side of the Ring, which is these kind of it's a 6-episode series that kind of deals with like the dark side of like real stories and professional wrestling. And it's actually like super well done. And like the first three that I watched are like Macho Man, Miss Elizabeth, and, like their tragic story because like they both died rather early on, and like Miss Elizabeth specifically died drug overdose, and like, you know, how kind of wrestling almost drove them to that. There was another one, I think it's the third episode, it was called The Killing of Bruiser Brody. Like, it was just this super huge, like, independent wrestler, like, in the 80s. He gets stabbed to death at a event in Puerto Rico. And, like, the officials there were like, it's wrestling. Like, it's all fake. Which probably caused this guy to, like, ultimately die. Because if he could have gotten help earlier, and if people had actually believed, like, that... he had been stabbed and it wasn't like a work, that he might have been saved. But yeah, there's some like really cool stuff in there. The last episode of the series was this one on this female wrestler called the Fabulous Moolah, and how she like kind of controlled the women's side of wrestling for 30 years. Like mm-hmm. if you wanted to be a female wrestler, you kind of had to go through her.
What is she called?
The Fabulous Moolah.
Okay.
It's ugly as fucking sin too. like now, like you think of like female wrestlers and like, you know, they're pretty attractive looking. She is fucking beast, or was. She died in her 80s.
What happened to? I'm sorry to like completely sidetrack. What happened to China? Did she fucking overdose?
Yeah, I think she overdosed as well.
Yeah. She was young, right?
What was that?
She was young, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, she was in her 40s, I think. But yeah, young.
That's young as shit, yeah. It's looking younger and younger every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, so these crazy stories, like if you have any interest in wrestling at all, I think these are like really well-produced kind of stories on it. The one that I think like a lot of people probably will like the most, and I think is actually maybe the worst one, is it's called The Montreal Screwjob, which is just about how, you know, they took Bret Hart's belt away from him before he left WWF to go to WCW.
Yeah.
It's like the most wrestling story. Like all these other ones are like these like personal stories.
There's like a way you can relate to it.
Yeah. It's this is just like, again, it's the one I think most people are going to look at, because it's like, oh, it deals with actual wrestling. Like, I'm more interested in like seeing like the shit that like these people like live through, and like the fact that, you know, wrestling's a fucked up industry, and you know, a lot of it's like independent contract work, and they're living like paycheck to paycheck. Like even the big most successful ones. So it's like nuts.
Hmm. Are these 6 half-hours or 6 hours?
They're like maybe like 45, 50 minutes long. So it's like, they're like an hour long, but like with if they had commercials, like it's on Hulu. I don't know what station it comes off of. Like I know they were aired on TV, but I'm not sure. But they're produced by Dark Side of the Ring.
All right. Do you want to put a score on it, or?
I would give it 4 out of 5. And I do like qualify that with, if you have any interest in wrestling, like give it a go. Like some of it is like deals with wrestlers, you know, like obviously Macho Man, like super huge in the '80s and early '90s. And then the other stuff, like people I never heard of before, but super interesting in the way they present it. So, and the other piece of TV I watch is an older series, not super old. I guess it's like 4 or 5 years old now. But I watched the first season of Fresh Off the Boat, which is an ABC sitcom
mm-hmm.
about a Taiwan family, a Taiwanese family that is living in Orlando in the 90s. It's your standard family comedy, but I think it's like pretty well done, and the jokes land pretty good. So Constance Wu is a standout in it. She plays the mom, and Randall Park as the dad. They're both great. It focuses more like the kid, the older kid is the main character, and he kind of does like the voiceover for a lot of it. But The two parents are fucking phenomenal. They're hysterical.
Is this show still going?
Yeah, yeah, they just renewed it for, I guess, season six.
Jeez Louise. Alright, cool. Are you gonna keep going with it?
Yeah, yeah. It's like something I can pop on while I'm at work. Like, sitcoms are really easy because they're only like 22 minutes long. So like you don't have to like sit down and like pay like close attention, which is why sometimes I don't get to like some of the other stuff with work and stuff. It's hard to sit down and watch like, you know, The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
It's like,
I guess that makes sense. But like, I'm not a huge sitcom fan.
Right.
So it's like, in order, like, I have to like be pulled kicking and screaming into being a fan of sitcom. And it happens. Like sometimes, like, you know, I remember in my early 20s, it was like That 70s Show. That was like so good that it pulled me in. But it's like, it's just so rare for me. I did watch like the Good Place, like season one of that.
Okay.
And I thought it was good. I thought it was totally fine, but I, like, wasn't compelled enough. Like, to me, it's like I need like, for me, it's like all like, but all my TV watching time goes to like hour long dramas. But like, I could see how if you're like trying to just watch shit at work, like if you're able to do that, like why you would not want to watch an hour long drama? Because like you said, it's like, the details really matter in that, and if you're like half watching, it's just not gonna.
Yeah, like with a sitcom, it's like, you know, you're kind of like hearing and like you know, jokes are. I mean, there are
dialogue based.
Yeah, but it's like you can kind of like, you know, all right, I see where this is going. I'm gonna pay attention right now. Where
it's a joke, you know.
Yeah, whereas like, you know, the littlest thing in a drama can be important and. Like, so you kind of have to pay your attention all the way through for them.
Yeah. So I don't ever get to this one, but I've heard of it, and I heard it's pretty good.
Yeah, that and Black-ish, which I watched like about a month ago. I watched the first.
Yeah.
Also, like similar concept, just a, you know, minority families instead of, you know, your traditional, you know, white rich family. Like, what's crazy is like these guys are, you know, in Black-ish and in Fresh Off the Boat, like they're upper middle class, if not rich.
Yeah, of course
it is. So it's not your traditional, like, it's not what you would expect for most people, but like it's funny anyway. So
yeah, there's a one on Netflix that just got canceled that I always heard like talked up, which was, I think, One Day at a Time.
Yeah,
I always meant to check out because like the mom on that is like, she was a character, she was playing Vanessa on 6 Feet Under, so I like always been like, oh, I'm gonna check that out, and then it got canceled. So like, fuck it.
It's like, yeah,
so, again, it's just like, it's not so much like, I just, to me, it's just like, again, I have to be pulled into a sitcom.
Yeah.
But, you know, Good Place, I just heard so many people talk it up that I'm like, all right, I'll check it out. And then I just watched the first season. But, yeah, it's just like, again, I'm an addict for, like, the fucking violence and all that. But, like, I guess I'll touch on one more show before we go. And that is, there's a brand new show on HBO called Euphoria. I don't know if you've heard about this. They've been
dying
the fuck out of it.
Zendaya.
Yeah, Zendaya, and I think there's some other people on the cast. Kind of slipping my mind right now, but it's like, think of like a modern update to Kids, like that movie Kids.
Okay. Yep.
Like, hey, did you know that high school kids do drugs? You know. There's a little more going on here, you know, like it's not just like that movie Kids. Have you seen the movie Kids? Because I know there's people that like, have not seen it.
I believe I have, but
yeah, it's surprising because I thought like everyone saw it because I was like, oh my god, NC-17 when I was a kid, I gotta see it. And most people are like, no, I haven't seen that. What the fuck? Like it's not just like that movie Kids is mostly kind of shock value. Like we're just like, oh shit, like these fucking kids are like little criminals basically, right? Like
right.
They're doing terrible things. This kid's spreading AIDS and Like, this is, doesn't feel like it's just for shock value. Like, it's about a girl who has a drug problem, and she's, like, 17 or some shit. Like, and it's not, so it's just, there's more going on here. You know, she makes a friend in the first episode who is a transgender girl. You know, and there's some stuff, you know, the first episode kind of deals with that. I think a really, like, well-done way. The creative guy behind us, I can't remember his name. I don't have it in front of me, but he did Assassination Nation, which is like a movie. It wasn't on my top 10 last year only because I had not seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons I checked this out. And I thought the first episode was like really strong, like really well directed, like looked great. Like, I'm probably going to keep watching this. So it's a recommend for me. Like, my girlfriend said, she was like, I was watching the news, and she said that, like, or she's like, I don't know what, like, the Today Show, or she said someone was on, and they said that, like, the only people that would watch the show are perverts, because it's a bunch of kids having sex, and which is, like, the same criticism that, like, Larry Clark films get, like, the movie Kids.
Right.
Which to me, it's like, whatever, I guess, call me pervert, but I'm like, it doesn't bother me. I'm not weirded out by it. Like, I know that the actual actors are adults. Like, they're not, you know, like, they're young, but they're, like, of age. So it's just, like, I don't know. It doesn't like, freak me out. So I'm like, but I guess for some people that would be, like, a huge turnoff. But I'm just like, it doesn't rub me one way or the other. I'm just like,
right.
Is the story good? Is
like, it's, good? Yeah, they're telling a story. Though I can also see the other way, like, where maybe it does turn some people off.
Yeah.
I could see some, like, creepers being turned on by the fact that, like, oh, these are
true.
Younger kids.
True, but, like, I just don't look at it as pornographic. I just, like,
right. It's just part of the narrative.
Drama. Like, let's say you watch 6 Feet Under on TV. There's a drama, but it also has R-rated sex in it, too. I look at this the same way. I'm like, it's just younger adult actors. Like, I get it. They're playing teenagers and they creep you out, but, like, I'm able to separate it in my head. Where I'm just like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So recommend for me, unless, like, again, like, if you think Larry Clark films are, like, disgusting, then you're not going to like this, but, this is pretty well done and there's a bit more going on. So
nice. Maybe I'll check that out.
Yeah.
An hour long too, or is that,
yeah, it's an hour. Yep. The first episode is exactly an hour. So that's it for this week, I think, right? I don't have anything else.
No, that's it.
All right, so we will hopefully be back next week. And I think, you know, when we do have the next episode, I will hopefully have both Child's Play and Toy Story 4.
I'm hoping. I don't know if I'll get out to both, but I'm going to try.
I want to see them both. All right, so let me put it this way. I'm guessing if you're going to see one, it's Toy Story.
Actually, like,
the other way?
Yeah, it's only because, like, my kids want to see Toy Story, and I don't know if we have time to go this weekend, so, we have a bunch of other shit planned, but, Child's Play is one, like, I can hit up by myself, like.
Yeah. I'm super interested in Child's Play. Like, I still have zero faith in it, but, been interesting to see, because, like, I've seen some of the early reaction from people, and it's been, like, very polarized. Like, just people that, like, the writer of The Guest and You're Next, Simon Barrett, he wrote on Twitter today that, like, he's a huge, huge fan of the franchise, and this is his new favorite of the entire franchise.
I'm nice. Just
like, what? Like, how? And I even said to him, like, the face, though, dude. Like, his face looks so stupid in it. Like, I'm sorry. It just looks bad. But, like, that's, like, it just, you know, to see someone who's, like, a super fan of the series go, like, this is the best one. I'm like, what? But I also, she will say it's just utter trash, so.
Which I have a feeling that if people watch, you know, the other 7 movies, I bet a lot of people would say that those movies are utter trash. I don't necessarily agree with them all. Like, I think some of them are not trash, but
I generally agree, but I do think, and someone, like, made a great point about this on Twitter the other day, which I can remember who, but, like, people forget, but I remember, like, the first time I saw Child's Play, it scared the living shit out of me. It was, like, a huge shock. when he comes to life for the first time.
Oh yeah.
And you watch it now, at least for me, I'm like, it's still effective because the film has so much buildup before it reaches that part where he comes alive. It's kind of like this weird, like, drama of, like, what's wrong with this kid and his doll? Is the kid crazy? And then all of a sudden the doll comes to life and he's like, you fucking bitch! And I'm like, holy shit! Like, I still remember the first time I saw it, my jaw just dropping, and I'm like an 8-year-old kid, just like, oh my god. So anyways, like, I'm sure it'll never live up to that for me, but like, I think people do forget that the first one was great. Like, well, great or not, the first one had some teeth to it. Like, and for me, it was great as a fucking little kid.
Yep.
Anyways, so we'll, I'm not sure if I'm going to make it next week 100%, but when we do have a new episode, we'll have those two. And then it really picks up, Chris. Like, July looks pretty good to me. Like, it's been a pretty disappointing summer so far, but July looks great.
Yeah, it's heating up.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know about you, but it's been like degrees here, 60 degrees.
It's been warm.
It has been warm for you?
Yeah.
Wow. Then you'd be jealous. I mean, it's probably 60 degrees right now. Anyways, we'll be back next week.
All right.
Next, the week after, and it will be heating up. So, come back then.
Movie dudes. Do, 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 do.